And now, the KHMB Feature Story of the Week. A look at people and events making a difference on the coastside.
The KHMB Feature Story of the Week is brought to you by Granola's Coffee House, located on Highway 1 next to BK Motors in Half Moon Bay. Granola's Coffee House, featuring specialty coffees, fresh baked goods, and free Wi-Fi.
We're happy to have in the studio with us today Jacqueline Long, who is the founder and director of Mindful Child and Family Therapy. Welcome to Coastside Radio.
Thanks, Jim. So grateful to be here with you.
You know, I was looking at newspaper articles, and it's been in the news a lot these days, about the fact that a lot of people, particularly our young people, have anxiety and depression. Mm-hmm. It seems to be a sign of the times for some reason. Being that you're in the therapy business, do you see a lot of that?
Yes, especially because of the pandemic. We were so insular. We were locked up, you know, isolated. And as human beings, we're social mammals. We were not supposed to be locked up and separated from each other. So there's absolutely been an increase in anxiety and depression since the pandemic. You know, during the pandemic, of course, as well. We tend to see a ripple effect for about a decade or so after something like that happens.
Do you find that this is more prevalent in certain age groups?
Well, in this case, it actually hit all age groups. You know, the little ones were locked up inside, not able to interact regularly with their peers. The parents didn't have the regular support that they needed from each other. People who are single and the elders didn't have their friend groups to connect with like usual. Even just going out for a walk and having a tea can help so much for anyone's day. So, yeah, it really did impact all of us.
Especially with young people, too. I mean, they weren't going to school. They didn't interact with other people. They were in isolation, you might say. Between male and female, for example, do you find that there's a proclivity for one particular gender to more or less hold some of that in and not let it out?
Good question. So there is actually some research that shows that men and women respond to stress differently. So whereas women, we actually get rewarded from a psychobiological perspective, meaning when we talk to people about things that are stressful, it actually secretes a little bit of oxytocin, the feel-good bonding hormone, and that helps to counteract the cortisol, the stress hormone, and estrogen actually supports that effect. So we are rewarded for connecting with each other and talking about our challenges. So the interesting thing is that testosterone actually counteracts that effect. So when men start talking about their challenges and the testosterone in their system counteracts that release of oxytocin, so they're not as rewarded when they talk about their problems. So men do tend to bottle things up more, or anyone with a little bit more testosterone, which could be a female body as well.
I know that a lot of times people have a feeling like, well, therapy, I mean, like, that makes me weak if I have to engage in therapy. Mm-hmm. Do you find that women are more prone to elicit that as a resource than men?
Yes, absolutely. And that is such a, you know, a common thing to have that stigma around seeking support. And I do think it's easier for women to reach out. We are seeing more men over the years reaching out. It's been such an honor to support both men and women on their healing journeys. I think it is becoming more accessible for men as well as women. And it's just incredibly courageous to take that first step and just to reach out to say, hey, I think I need a little bit of support with this. It's incredibly courageous.
Suppose, for the sake of discussion, that a woman is in a situation, let's say a married woman, and she feels that the relationship would be enhanced with therapy, but the husband isn't particularly up for that. Again, you know, the ego or the, you know, that makes me weak. I don't want to go lay on a couch and have people talk to me. What advice would you give a person in dealing with that? In other words, where the therapy would be best done with a couple, and one is more prone to see it as a valuable resource, do you have any particular suggestions for how the one partner could help the other partner realize the benefit of therapy?
Yeah, that's very common. You know, I kind of lean towards if this other partner isn't interested in seeking support or having support for the couple, I actually really lean towards supporting that one motivated partner. There's so much that she or he could do by themselves, even if the other person in the couple isn't motivated yet. So I would actually recommend that person who is motivated to work on the partnership come in for individual therapy and focus on her or his relationship. Because, yeah, there's just so much that we can do to nourish and support that person with their relationship, even if the other person isn't there.
Now, we had an opportunity to have a little conversation before we started recording this interview. And I know from speaking to you that you are passionate about what you do. So you've been doing this for several years, and I'm sure that you probably have some success stories that have been very gratifying to you, that made you feel particularly good about helping people get over certain impediments or stresses or whatever. Do you have a story that you'd like to share with us of a situation that was particularly memorable to you?
Stories are so important, and in terms of therapy, they're really sacred. So while I'm not able to share a particular story,
we're not asking for names, certainly.
Yeah, I can say one of the most gratifying things in my career has been watching children who have come to me early on and who I've supported over the years, who are now thriving in their lives as young adults. So I've been doing this for 20 years, and it's just been incredible to see children come to us who are incredibly anxious, maybe washing their hands 100 times a day, or afraid to go onto the soccer field even though they love soccer, or getting bullied at school, and to see them week after week blossom and grow into the incredible human beings that they are and unleash their full potential and actualize their true nature and really grow into an authentic expression of themselves over time, that's been really rewarding.
Do you have any clients that, like, say, you've helped early on that have come back over a period of time after the therapy was officially over and still thanked you or shared with you that their life is full and rich and thank you for what you did for them?
So in this work, it's really rare to hear from people after they've left, unless they come back wanting for support again, which is common. But I have received a couple of notes over the years, and they have brought tears to my eyes to see the positive impact that our time together had on them. It's very touching when that happens.
So if somebody is listening to this and they would like to know more about some of the things that you and members of your staff do, how can they get in touch with you?
The best way is to go to our website, which is an acronym for Mindful Child and Family Therapy. So it's mcaft.com, and fill out an appointment form. It has all of the information we need to help match the person with the best therapist possible. And here on the coast, we have 6 therapists that are available to see children, teens, adults, couples, the whole family.
So they specialize just in certain age groups?
Exactly.
Mm. Now, speaking of that, do you have a particular age group that you work with?
I really love it all. I'm very passionate about what I do. I love working with the adults. I love working with women. I love working with men. I love working with couples, families, kids. I don't have a favorite. I love it all. So I'm kind of a generalist in this family practice.
Do you have any advice for anybody who maybe is suffering from some anxieties or depressions, little tips that you can give them, maybe just to kind of help them along the way until they could maybe enter into a therapy situation?
Sure. So a quick piece of advice is to reach out to look at the book DARE, the DARE response, D-A-R-E. It's also an acronym, and it's a really beautiful way to work with your stress if you're having anxiety or panic come up. This is a really, really helpful modality that was actually created not by a therapist, but just by a regular person who is having a hard time. So it's something that a lot of people can relate to. In this modality of DARE, one of the most basic experiences is to practice welcoming the anxiety. So the A in DARE stands for accept. And it's so counterintuitive to accept this thing that feels really overwhelming and big and scary. So that's why people often come to us needing some support with that, because the more we push it away or resist it, the harder the challenge becomes.
And it is natural,
it's natural
to not accept it, right?
It's very natural to not accept anxiety.
Or be in denial, right?
Yeah, I don't have anxiety. No, that thing is not anxiety. It's a heart attack. You know, a lot of people mistake, they end up in the ER and doctors send them home saying, like, listen, I think it was just some anxiety, and the person's very confused and disoriented.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Jocelyn, it's been a pleasure visiting with you today.
Thank you.
You made my day a little happier and less stressful just visiting with you. So thank you so very much for coming in.
Thank you, Jim.
Jacqueline Long with the benefits of therapy in everyday life. For the feature story of the week, I'm Jim Henderson.